Welcome back into Midday. I'm Gabe Ortiz. Coming up on Monday, keeping track of relatives suffering from dementia and keeping them out of harm's way is a constant concern. New legislation moving through Maryland's General Assembly is meant to support those caretakers. Erica Kane will be in the host chair to talk about that story. Join us then. Ramadan has come to an end and it's time to celebrate. Eid al-Fitr means breaking the fast. And it follows the last day of the Islamic Holy Month. Imam Yassin Sheikh led prayers for the Islamic Society of Baltimore this morning. He's preparing for more Eid celebrations over the weekend, but he was able to make some time to join us on Zoom during this very busy holiday. Thanks for joining us, Imam Sheikh. We got you on the line.
Good afternoon, Gabe. Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much again for making some time. I'm sure it's a very busy day and you have a couple of very busy days ahead of you. So we appreciate you joining us here to break down everything going on in Baltimore around this holiday. So I saw in our lead up doing some research for our conversation today that you actually have overflow parking plans on the website ahead of this holiday. It sounds like it's going to be very busy. Can you just give our listeners a brief description of the scene of what your community and what the mosque in the final days of Ramadan and today as Eid begins looks like?
Thank you for having me, Gabe. And definitely I'll share some of the parts of Ramadan and describing the atmosphere. The last few days of Ramadan. So I want to start by speaking about what Ramadan is and its significance. So Ramadan is the ninth month in the Islamic lunar calendar. So the Islamic calendar is a lunar calendar. It's a month of fasting. It's connected to one of the major pillars of Islam, which is the pillar of fasting. It's a deeply spiritual month, a deeply spiritual time of the year, because it connects us with, you know, our souls. We believe that God created us with body and soul. Our souls are from the command of God. No doctor can extract your soul and show you what your soul is, what it looks like. It's the most important part of our makeup. So when the soul is in us, our bodies do not decompose in the sun. When the souls leave us, after a few hours, our bodies start to decompose. When our soul leaves us, animals start eating from our dead corpse if our bodies were left outside. So this shows us that the soul is the most important part of our makeup, and it's what brings humans dignity and honor. Dignity and honor, which is intrinsic to every human. And the Quran tells us that after creating Adam, it was after his soul was blown in him that God commanded the angels to prostrate to him. So now the soul being the most important part of our makeup requires great care, just as our bodies do. The same way that we provide nutrition to our bodies, our souls also need nutrition. But the soul can also become corrupt if desires are left unrestrained. So the acts of fasting, the practice of fasting teaches us discipline. It teaches us structure. It teaches us organization. And it's an act of restraint. It's an act of patience. It teaches us what we do not need, like that we don't need more in our lives. Our unrestrained and unfettered pursuit of our base desires is really what leads us to oppression, usurping the rights of others. So what fasting does, it teaches us how to tame our base desires. And we look around us today, clever marketing has convinced us and duped us into thinking that we need what we don't need, that we acquire with money we don't have to please people we don't like, just to paraphrase Dave Ramsey. So there's a very direct correlation between consumption and our base desires. Consumption fuels our base desires. And the Quran teaches us that Adam and Eve fell from heaven and their clothing was removed when they ate from the forbidden tree, when they gave into their base desire. So fasting teaches us to take a step back a little, to control and tame ourselves, to realize that our true potential as humans is greater than just eating and drinking and pleasing ourselves. So this is the deep spiritual lesson in fasting. It heightens our consciousness as humans. It makes us clear-eyed. It's also, in a sense, a godly attribute because God does not need food. He does not need drink or sleep. So we adorn ourselves with these qualities as much as humanly possible. It moves us away from the physicality of this worldly physical realm. So the final days of Ramadan were spent in deep, deep reflection, deep worship, contemplation, and deep devotion.
And the thing that intrigues me the most about what you said is that these values, whether you're a follower of the Islam faith or not, these are universal human values. Can you speak a little bit to some of the things that people can take away, whether they are intentionally observing Ramadan or not, from some of those principles that you described?
Absolutely. So the command of fasting in the Quran, God mentions, O believers, fasting was ordained upon you as it was prescribed for those before you. And if we look historically, not just those who were recipients of a divine scripture, but historically, tribes and societies practiced the fasting. We're hunter-gatherers. We only ate when food was available to us. So we went through periods of hunger as humans, historically our ancestors, and satiety and being satiated was never the objective or goal. So this is definitely a deeply spiritual practice in many communities around the world, and even before the Quran was revealed. So even before it was prescribed as an act of worship in the religion of Islam, we believe that previous prophets also fasted as well. And also, like Ramadan, besides just the restraining of one's base desires and taming oneself, is deeply significant because it's also tied to another major pillar of Islam, which is charity. So it evokes within us, when we're fasting, the spirit of giving, the spirit of kindness, the spirit of generosity, and the spirit of hospitality. Now, these are major themes in the Quran. Anybody who reads the Quran will find the command to be kind, generous, to donate, to contribute significantly in the Quran. And it's so important at a time when the stranger and immigrant is immediately judged or treated as a suspect. The theme of hospitality practiced by Abraham in the Quran is an important story. So fasting teaches us that while we have food, we have drink available and accessible to us, but we voluntarily deprive our bodies for a few hours a day, there are millions in America and worldwide who are struggling to meet their basic needs in life. So what this does, besides just taming our base desires, it motivates us to donate, which is another major important pillar of Islam. And the pillars and worships are tied to spiritual benefits. Our greed as humans knows no bounds, and we have a very unhealthy relationship to wealth. Wealth that God gave us that belonged to someone else before it came into our pockets, that will eventually end up in someone else's hands after we die. So it's a great spiritual test for us to see whether we can part from the wealth that God has given us. So in this month, you'll find Muslims being even more generous in their charities, opening their homes, inviting people in to eat, and breaking bread together.
My name's Gabe Ortiz, speaking right now with Imam Yassin Sheikh, the lead resident scholar and head of community affairs at the Islamic Society of Baltimore. So looking ahead to this weekend, Imam Sheikh, you're having a lot of events, you're having food, bazaar vendors, and so much more. For people who want to get involved or people who aren't familiar with what you have planned for this weekend, can you just give us an overview of what folks can expect for this Eid from the Islamic Society of Baltimore?
Yeah, thank you, Gabe. So Eid is the day of celebration that marks the end of the month of fasting, and it's a celebration given to Muslims, we believe, as a gift for devoting ourselves to fasting. And Islam, the Islamic month, the calendar is a lunar calendar. So one of the aims of fasting is to complete the course and prescription to train ourselves, and also to glorify God for guidance and to show gratitude and thanks. So we start the pet day with worship. So we shouldn't lose our focus. Even though we're allowed to celebrate and be joyous and happy, we should never lose our focus. And this is the balance that Islam is trying to teach us, that you're allowed to enjoy yourselves, you're allowed to be happy, but you also have to focus on the purpose of your existence, which is the service of God and the worship of God. So Islam teaches us to celebrate and be joyous, but to be balanced in our happy occasions too. So we offer the daily morning prayer, which is one of the five prayers that we offer daily. And then that is followed by a special Eid prayer. So the Eid prayer starts with glorifying God, and then a devotional prayer with a sermon. All the time, we're keeping our tongues moist in remembrance of God by reciting short supplications. But after the prayer is when the actual feast and party begins, right? So then we have vendors and the community come out. We're actually celebrating tomorrow, our Eid festival for the community. But today will be spent going to people's homes, having food together, exchanging gifts, people wearing nice clothes, and just relaxing and enjoying themselves, and showing gratitude to God for the blessings that He's given us.
So you mentioned to us before we brought you on air today about your Indian heritage. Your mosque, like many United States mosques, have worshipers with local roots and connections around the world. It's something you've celebrated on your social media accounts. Here's a little taste.
Where are you from?
Yeah,
I'm
sorry.
From Senegal. You're from Pakistan.
My parents are from India, Mumbai.
I'm from Baltimore.
I'm Chinese and white. Indian American. Well, please.
From Baltimore.
I'm from Egypt, Pakistan.
So we hear in that clip there, we have folks who are from Far East Asia. We have folks who are from Southeast Asia. We have folks who just claim that they're right here from Baltimore and many other places. Can you speak a little bit to how you have created such a welcoming place at the Islamic Society of Baltimore for people from both here in Baltimore and also who are coming from all over the world. How do you create that kind of community?
It's a great question. So I think the mosque is reflective of the state of Maryland. Maryland is a beautiful state. I love it, even though I'm not born and raised here, as you could probably tell. I love the state of Maryland. I love the landscape. I also like the weather. Some people might not like the weather, but I like the four seasons. And it's a very diverse state. I think Gettysburg and Silver Spring are two of the three most diverse cities in the United States of America. So you see that diversity reflected in the mosque as well. Lots of different languages spoken. And the messaging that we deliver is to the Muslim community to come to the mosque and make the mosque your home. This is your home. It's a place of worship. It's a welcoming space for you. It's for you to come and grow in your faith and to build bonds of brotherhood and sisterhood and strengthen your ties with the rest of the community. So you'll find any given Friday where we have our major worship during the week and also Ramadan and during Eid, you'll see the diversity, you'll see the colors, you'll see the different cultural clothing that people wear. And also in the month of Ramadan, when we feed our community daily, hundreds of people getting together every night to eat, we try to reflect the diversity in the food that we share as well. So some nights there'll be an Indian Pakistani cuisine, some nights there'll be a North African cuisine or a West African cuisine, some nights there'll be a Middle Eastern cuisine, and sometimes just regular American food, your burgers and your fries and wings and stuff like that. So it's definitely a message that we deliver to our young and our old, that this mosque is for all Muslims, and you're welcome here.
And of course, Eid is a festive holiday, as you just described, but it is tough to avoid all of the news coming out around the world right now. I'm curious if you and your community are celebrating any differently in light of renewed conflicts happening all across the world.
It's a great question. So the mood is definitely somber in the Muslim community. We're very well aware and cognizant that while we are blessed with abundance, we're blessed with security, two very, very important gifts from God. There are millions suffering in Gaza, millions suffering around the world. You know, of course, after the what some would describe as a genocide in Gaza, the closure of the Aqsa Mosque in the last few weeks during the month of Ramadan, one of the holiest sites in Islam. But during peak time of the year in Ramadan, it's been closed and worshippers have not been allowed to worship there. Then we had the most recent invasion of Iran, or the bombardment of Iran, also initiated in the month of Ramadan, a war that the American public is not in the mood for, that doesn't benefit America. It's not an America First policy. We're very well aware of what's going on. We enter and exit the month of Ramadan with the conviction to speak out against injustice that we perceive as injustice and oppression, and for America to do better as a world leader to bring peace and stability in the world, because America is meant to be peacemakers and America has that power and capacity to lead in this area.
In my experience, and I think many folks would concur with this, one of the best ways to fight against injustice is to educate people and to have as easy of access to information about these kinds of issues as possible. And something that you've done with your community is you have a video series with the hashtag Asking Muslims, where congregants are asked about their lives. We have a clip here that I'd like to play.
When did you first start wearing hijab?
In October.
I started in high school.
I've been wearing hijab since sixth grade, since middle school.
August 2021 is when I started.
1976, I was 19.
Can you tell us a little bit about why you started this Asking Muslim series and what you hope comes from it?
It's a great question. So one of the benefits of social media is that we get to normalize and humanize the Muslim community, especially at a time where Islamophobia is trendy, elected officials making obscene remarks about Islam and going unchallenged, not being called out, extreme language that is often used to advance extreme policies, deeply hurtful remarks that make the Muslim community vulnerable and a target for bigotry and hatred. It's been documented at Islam by groups that document Islamophobia across the country that they've received over 8,500 complaints of anti-Muslim discrimination in 2025 alone, more so than 2024. It's a well-funded industry, Islamophobia, and it really cuts our work out as a community. So we aim to use our platform to humanize the Muslim experience, to fight the bigotry with kindness, and to show people that Muslims are part of this country. Muslims have a long-standing history in America. 30% of the slaves that were forcibly brought here from Africa were Muslim. Thomas Jefferson had a copy of the Quran. Ayub bin Suleiman Jala was an African prince from present-day Senegal who was placed on a plantation in Maryland. And he would go to the woods to pray. One time he was mocked while he was praying, so he ran away. Upon being captured, he stated his reason for fleeing and then was granted the right to pray here in Kent County in the state of Maryland. 5 to 10% of the physicians in this country are Muslim. In fact, if you want to go through med school, you have to study Dr. Hussein Sattar's renowned book, The Fundamentals of that are known as Pathoma, designed for USMLE Step 1 review. So it's a widely regarded key resource for medical board exams. So Muslims are your neighbors, your co-workers, your cashiers, your cab drivers. You'll find Muslims in almost every industry. There are notable Muslim sports personnel like Kyrie Irving and legends of the game like Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, Hakeem Olajuwon, and of course, Muhammad Ali. So as Muslims, we fight bigotry for our actions. We showcase that Muslims are beneficial to society. The Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, said the best of people are those who benefit people, bringing good and justice, preventing evil, oppression and hardship. These are important Islamic principles. The Prophet Muhammad also said, none of you is a true believer if your stomach is full while your neighbor goes hungry. So what concerns us, because we are American, whether it's education, whether it's healthcare, food deprivation and hunger, oftentimes Islam might be viewed as a foreign religion, but 30% plus of Muslims in this country are indigenous, are part of this country for hundreds of years. So we as a community join efforts, initiatives and causes to bring good to society and to uplift people, working with food pantries, relief organizations, domestic violence shelters, local schools to provide snacks for children that are from families that meet the poverty threshold. This is not just our civic duty, but it's also an Islamic duty. So this is how we choose to fight the bigotry and hatred.
My name's Gabe Ortiz, speaking right now with Imam Yassin Sheikh, the lead resident scholar and head of community affairs at the Islamic Society of Baltimore. Yassin, before I let you get out of here, is there just a general message that you would like to share with the wider Maryland community during this time and with Eid and the end of Ramadan upon us?
Absolutely. And my message would be to meet a Muslim, get to know them, shake hands with them. Muslims believe in unity and diversity. They believe in peaceful coexistence. They're kind, generous people, and they're your neighbors and friends. And I would invite people to come and visit a mosque, get to see the inside of a mosque, see what the Muslim community is about. And don't let the people at the top pit one group against another or one social class against another. We've seen this story being played in the past, and we refuse to accept that.
And if people out there want to get involved or just want to learn more about the Islamic Society of Baltimore, what's the best way they can do that?
They can absolutely reach out to us via our website and or follow our social media and get in touch with us.
Imam Yassin Sheikh, the lead resident scholar and head of community affairs at the Islamic Society of Baltimore. Imam, thank you so much for your time today. We really, really appreciate it.
Thank you for the opportunity.
Coming up next, people from across the country are coming to Bowie, Maryland to have their hair braided 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Why? Well, WYPR's Wamboy Kamau has that story next. You're tuned in to Midday. My name is Gabe Ortiz. We'll be right back after a quick break.
You're listening to 88.1 WYPR.